The Theosophical Society presents Mr. Jeffrey Hodson in a talk entitled Psychic Forces Affecting Human Health and Happiness.
The theosophical teaching that interplay between the spirit, the thinking, and the emotions of man and his physical body is almost continuous. Medical science has at last come to an acceptance of this idea, and it is now quite normal to recognize that in addition to physical causes of disease, such as accident, old age, dietetic errors, and the wrong conduct of life, in addition, long-continued discordant states of mind and emotion can themselves cause disease. Medical science has long arrived at this conclusion, and now there has come into existence psychosomatic medicine. This word, psychosomatic, is a combination of two Greek words, psyche for soul and soma for body. So, psychosomatic medicine. Let us look into this subject together, shall we? In time of fear or anger, powerful changes are said to go on within the physical body. The heart muscles, for example, are stimulated to more rapid pulsations. Circulation is in consequence shifted from the stomach and the intestines to the heart, the brain, the lungs, and the muscles surrounding the skeleton. In fact, all the bodily resources are mobilized for effective fight or flight in times of fear, anger, danger. It is thought that the mechanism of these automatic reactions are largely chemical, and that they are caused by powerful substances secreted by the glands and the nerve endings. According to this view, every impression from the outside world that threatens the security of the individual, that provokes him to anger, or, yes, inspires him to fear, these impressions automatically call into play a complicated biochemical mechanism designed by nature to prepare the body for action. Frequently, however, no action follows. In consequence, there is emotional repression and the tensed bodily energy charges build up. These intensify the situation and cause further difficulties, so that you get a kind of chain reaction linking together the state of the mind and the emotion and the function and condition of the physical body and its organs. Dr. Alexis Carroll, in his book Man the Unknown, has put this wonderfully well. Allow me to read to you from that book. Envy, hate, fear, when these sentiments are habitual, they are capable of starting organic changes and genuine diseases. Businessmen who do not know how to fight worry die young. Emotions determine the dilation or the contraction of the small arteries. and these are accompanied by changes in blood circulation. Pleasure causes the skin of the face to flush. Fear turns it white. Thought can generate organic lesions, and the instability of modern life, the ceaseless agitation, create states of consciousness which bring about nervous and organic disorders of the stomach, of the intestines, of nutrition, and the passage of intestinal microbes into the circulatory apparatus. And he closes his statement with these words: man thinks, invents, loves, suffers, admires and prays with his brain and all his organs. This approach to health and disease has led to the discovery of at least 9 most frequent chronic organic disturbances in which emotional conflicts will always be found to be present, even though not recognized, particularly by the patient. What are these 9 chronic disturbances? Well, they are indigestion and hyperacidity. It's one of them, gastric ulcer and duodenal ulcer. One has said, in fact, the stomach is the sounding board of the emotions. Rather clever, isn't it? Then the third type, colitis. Spastic colitis indicates a more severe form of fear, it is found, associated with resentment, for example, dealing with a real panic reaction sometimes. Then fourth, bronchial asthma, in which the emotional nature is seriously disturbed, and the same in the fifth, chronic respiratory disturbances in general. Six, chronic hyperthyroidism. 7, chronic headaches, and those painful and difficult recurring migraine attacks. These also are said to have psychosomatic associations. 8 is rheumatism, which I gather refers to both muscular and arthritis rheumatism, whilst 9, the difficulty called diabetes, can be associated with psychological disturbances. Particularly, I believe, shock, disappointment, humiliation, particularly about failures, and also when the sufferer will not admit that they themselves are the ones who failed. They tend to blame others, and this kind of a mental attitude has been found to be associated with diabetes. However, psychosomatic as a term connotes more than a kind of illness. It's a comprehensive approach to the totality of a process of interplay amongst many systems in the body of man. And these are somatic or bodily, psychic, social, and cultural. So you see, psychosomatics deals with stresses, strains, and adjustments, with acute emergency mechanism, disintegrations, and chronic defensive states or disease conditions, as I've been saying. In fact, the term psychosomatic refers not so much and not only to physiology, or psychology, or psychopathology, but rather to a concept of processes occurring throughout the whole living system of man, including social and cultural elaborations and influences. all this has been rather well expressed, somewhat like this. All healthy and sick human functions are now regarded as psychosomatic. That sounds rather far-reaching, doesn't it? But it is becoming generally agreed. All healthy and sick human functions are psychosomatic. For example, emotions are always associated with action patterns expressed through a portion of the sympathetic or autonomic nervous systems and those organs with which they are connected. Specific emotions have appropriate associated physical patterns, it is found. Emotions repressed from open expression inevitably lead to chronic tensions. These intensify in degree and, yes, and prolong in time the resultant supply of nerve force to the body. So you get a building up, do you see? And the resulting excessive organic stimulation leads to disturbances of function, which may eventually end in unhealthy changes in the actual physical tissues of the body and the functions of the various organs. This is the development which has occurred in medicine in our days, and as you will notice, it brings us very near to our theosophical view concerning man. What then has theosophy to contribute to our subject? Well, I suppose I ought to answer that theosophy provides us with knowledge of the full anatomy of man, that he is, in fact, sevenfold. I hardly need repeat the bodies, but here they are briefly: the physical, the astral, the mental, the intuitional, the atmic, or that of spiritual will, and two higher ones which as yet are dormant in man. Another classification would be the physical body, the etheric double, the astral or emotional body, and the mental body, these four being mortal, our personal nature, and shining within them and acting through them, the triple inner self of spiritual will, spiritual intuition and wisdom, and spiritual intelligence. Theosophy adds to this that all of these parts of our nature are interactive upon each other, from the physical right up to that of spiritual and will. Mind and emotion affect the body, and bodily experiences can evoke emotional and mental states, and even arouse into action the intuition and the will. Thus, you see, changes and conditions in particularly the mental and astral bodies do affect the nervous system and the glands of the physical body. How does this come about? What does theosophy say in explanation of this complicated interchange? Well, by at least three means. Conditions in the psyche, that's the astral and mental bodies, influence the flow of the vitality, or prana, in the etheric and physical bodies. Also, those conditions affect the state of the mental, astral, and etheric bodies, a kind of reverse process, do you see? And third, and this is very interesting and important, the interchange between the inner and the outer man is brought about by affecting the force centers, or what in Sanskrit are called chakras, wheels, you know, the chakras in the superphysical body, the glands and the other organs in the physical body. This last contribution to the subject is very important indeed, for all these changes and influences from the superphysical part of us reach the physical via the force centers and the etheric double. A full understanding demands a study of the chakras and the etheric double, for herein lie the true keys to the problem of health and disease. I expect you all know about the chakras by now, but I might repeat that they are 7 in number, and that they exist in the etheric, astral, and mental bodies. They are whirling, funnel-shaped centers of soul force or psychic energy. They are situated in areas in the etheric and superphysical bodies which correspond to certain parts of the physical body. I'd better name them, perhaps. There is the sacral chakra at the sacrum, another at the spleen, next at the solar plexus with its funnel going right back into the spinal cord, another opening out in front of the body at the heart with its tube going down to the spinal cord, another at the throat similarly connected with the spinal cord, and another opening out between the eyebrows with its tube penetrating in and being connected with the frontal brain and particularly the pituitary gland. And finally, there is what is called the crown chakra, which opens out at the top of the head. Now, these chakras may be regarded as channels, and yes, funnels, of connection between the inner self in his mental and emotional bodies and his physical life, physical body and its condition. So, as far as I understand it, theosophy teaches of the chakras and the etheric double as links, could I say, between physical and superphysical consciousness. Take a simple example or two. When the throat tightens with self-consciousness, or the stomach turns over or sinks, as we say, this means that changes in astral consciousness have affected first the astral body, then the astral chakras at the throat or at the solar plexus, then in this reaches the etheric chakra and body, and eventually the physical gland and nerve centers become affected. There may be a sudden inrush of nerve and psychic energy, or a reduction as to whether there is overexpression or a certain amount of suppression in one's psychic nature. So you see, each physical organ is in contact with the superphysical bodies and the inner self via these 7 chakras with which each one of us is endowed. They're a special subject of study, and I do recommend that wonderful work, The Chakras, by C.W. Leadbeater. There really is no other book to compare with it. It's a collection of knowledge from many outer literary sources, supplemented and greatly added to by his own direct clairvoyant observations of the tremendous force known as Kundalini and its play throughout the physical and superphysical bodies, and particularly outwards through the seven chakras, which we have been thinking about together. I haven't time to go into it much further, but I could say that in good health, each chakra has its own cord and its place in the total personal cord. You know, we all have our own specific and very individual group of frequencies, expressive of our monad, of our ego, and of our personality as it is made up, and our karma and the way this affects us, and our capacities for response to interior influences and external events which affect us. Now, when we're in perfect health, all our bodies are in tune with each other, and each chakra is preserving its own cord and its place in the total personal cord, so that you have a kind of complete harmony throughout your whole nature. This is happiness. This is health. The life force, prana, superphysical and physical, then meets with no obstructions. It flows freely and harmoniously throughout our whole nature. And the chakras and the physical body and all its organs are in tune, functioning perfectly, producing and maintaining each other as a result of their close coordination. Then, other factors also being present, you have perfect health. Now, our problem, of course, is how to maintain this. You and I, we have to live in the world of men, with all the strains, stresses, abnormalities, unnatural conditions which play upon us, affect us all the time. We have to develop a kind of system of preserving our own personal integrity, our real individual selfhood, and be our true selves amidst all these often rather conflicting and disturbing influences. How can this be done? Well, one answer is the development of a spiritual aspect to one's daily life, forming the habit every day of directing one's thought towards the source of one's existence and the source of the life force itself, and attuning oneself to the spiritual source of all life. This opens the channels, do you see, and allows the hidden, vital, powerful life force, solar and super solar, to descend and flow through the whole of our nature. If we can save some 20 minutes every day for this purpose, our health will certainly be maintained. Other factors being equal. One needs to retire, you know, every day into some privacy, so that one's nature may rebuild itself in quietude, and then with the body relaxed, the thoughts may be drawn from the ephemeral and transient events and things and people in the outer world and centered in the eternal verities and forces which belong to our spiritual self. And as we do this regularly, we begin to know ourselves for what we really are, a divine Son of God.